It's 8:19. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Summit County Council met yesterday and heard a report on summer visitation, as well as the first report on next year's budget. On the phone with details, I have Summit County Council member Chris Robinson. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, speaking of the speed limit change on State Route 224, did the county get any update or, preview that this was going to happen?
No. Not to my knowledge, not the council anyway. That doesn't mean that Derek Radke or somebody in Public Works didn't know about it, or Tom Fisher, but we didn't know a thing about it.
Yeah, well,
I didn't anyway.
Well, nobody else did either, except for those, I think, getting pulled over, found out about it pretty darn quick. Let's move to the meeting. The council received a presentation from Park City Chamber and Visitors Bureau CEO Bill Malone, as well as the marketing director Jim Powell. They had some summer visitation results and a look ahead at their winter marketing efforts. Can you talk to us about what the takeaway was for you?
Well, I think the takeaway was that, it's a little early to forecast the whole year, but it appears that they're, maybe slightly below last year, but doing reasonably well. I mean, it's most of their bookings come in January, and that's often predicated on what kind of a winter we're going to have, or we are then having. But it was a very positive report. They've, got a definite strategy for attracting visitation and, advertising and going a lot digitally now, but in new markets. And they have some new video footage, some new short TV spots, and we met with Jim Powell and Bill Malone. Whenever you meet with them, you know that they're very busy and they're very engaged in promoting tourism in our county, and it's always impressive.
Yeah. So, I mean, with record skier visits, of course, last year, and now pretty decent busy summers, I mean, do we really need to market Park City anymore? It sounds like the world pretty much knows where we are.
That's a tough question. I think, a few years ago, we decided to renegotiate our contract with the chamber because we had been on autopilot at giving them 90% of the transient room tax. And it had grown from, like $5 million to $10 million or something over a period of not that many years. And so we just kept feeding fuel to it. We've since renegotiated that and pared back some of, the percentage that the chamber gets is declining down to, in another year or two, it'll be, I think, 70% down from 90. Still a lot of money. And do we keep, we need to keep asking that question. I don't know if you stop or, ratchet back, do you stay strong for a short while and then you dissipate and decline. I don't know, but it's I don't have the whole answer. I'm just saying it's a good question that we need to ask ourselves.
Yeah. Can the transient room tax money only be used for marketing rather than maybe?
No, it can be used, a percentage of it, I think up to a third, can be used for other facilities, including, we gave some of it to Park City as a grant for under the rubric of recreational facilities when we helped them buy Bonanza Flat. We gave a couple million dollars of TRT money.
Right.
And we've used it to build our fairgrounds. So it can go into capital facilities, but I think by statute there's a fair portion of it that needs to go into promotion, but other it can also go into hard goods. And there is a move by some of the smaller class counties, like the third through the sixth class counties, that they have a lot of visitation, like if you're next to a national park or something, but they can't use the TRT to build a road to the national park. And they're trying to, there's efforts now and then, and to amend the legislation, to have you go to the legislature and amend it so that it can be used for a little broader menu of things.
One of the Park City Council candidates noted in the forum Tuesday that Park City has been over-marketed and suggested that maybe we use some of the money for mitigation as opposed to marketing. I don't know if that falls into that allowed use or not. But we'll be talking with Chamber Bureau CEO Bill Malone on a money maybe Monday, and perhaps he could answer some of those questions for us. All right.
I mean, I'm not advocating that we take any money away from them at this point. But the broader community discussion is, you know, what point is enough? And I don't think that, I think some of the legislation that's been talked about would maybe facilitate mitigating some of those impacts. That's what some of the smaller counties are complaining of, that they don't have a way of using TRT for the kinds of infrastructure they would like that would mitigate.
Okay. Let's see. Summit County Manager Tom Fisher and Financial Officer Matt Levitt presented the council with a message about next year's budget. What I think I heard from Tom was that there are no proposed tax increases, but we could see some fee increases being proposed.
You know, we didn't go deep into any fee increases. What I took away from the budget was that, you know, we have about $5 million more in the operating. He's proposing $5 million more than last, than the current year. So going from 50 to 55 million, I believe, is the number roughly. And that 3 million of that is new intergovernmental transfers, mainly from the feds and from the state, relating to Medicaid expansion. And then there's another 2 million that's spread among a lot of different departments where relatively small increases in expenditure. There were budget requests for a lot more than that. And maybe I may be misstating it. Maybe we were at 55 in current year and it's at 60. But it's a difference of about $5 million in the operating budget that's being proposed. But there were requests for an additional $8 million that the manager is not, you know, is not recommending.
So how is it? I mean, do we look good financially?
Yes, I think so. But there is a little, the county manager and the council, I think, is a little skeptical about the long-term economic forecast, and that we don't want to be planning for continued growth when we think there might be some clouds on the horizon, maybe distant clouds, but nonetheless somewhat cloudy.
The council also heard a presentation, I believe, from some East County residents requesting that Summit County maintain a portion of Aspen Drive. They were to present you with a petition. What is it that they're looking for? And what did you guys decide about it?
Well, they're in Manor Lands and Wilderness. And you went to, let's see, Wilderness Acres. Anyway, they're up on the North Slope. There's a series of about 600 lots that were created years ago when probably designed to be summer homes. And they have maybe a third of them built upon. I don't know the exact number, but there's some vacant lots as well. And they want the county to take over the maintenance of a mile or two of road leading up to it. And their argument was that, we don't get any services from the county, and, you know, we're quote-unquote paying all these taxes and the county should take the road over. And the road is based on a 30-foot easement. Our minimum standard is 60 feet. It, according to Jamie Bracken from the attorney's office, in order for us to accept a new road, they'd have to have 24 feet of asphalt. This is a gravel road. And And so, you know, to bring it up to standard would cost a lot of money, which I think makes that request dead on arrival. And then there's the whole other question of, you know, where does it start and stop? I mean, there's a lot of other, as I pointed out, a lot of other private communities. You just think Glenwild or Promontory or Red Hawk or Stagecoach that have pay a lot of tax, a lot more than, you know, the assessed value of these little cabin lots. And they have private roads, and they could argue they're not getting the services that, you know, that they're paying for. But I don't think it's going anywhere. But they're nice people, and we were appreciative to hear from them. But we'd taken a tour of their subdivision a couple of, maybe a month earlier, the council did, and saw some of the issues they're facing. But I don't think the county will be taking those roads over anytime soon.
All right. Let's see. There was a public meeting regarding the Basin Recreation District's intent to increase property taxes by almost $2.4 million to maintain and replace district assets and to prepare for future capital investments. It sounds like a lot of money. And does the council have to approve this before they actually make it part of their budget?
I believe so. This was just an information meeting yesterday, so there was no action needed. It's one of the steps required under state law for truth in taxation. The current levy there is 00367, and they haven't been through truth in taxation, I think, since 2004. Since that time, the scope of their assignment has increased greatly with a lot of new facilities and new open space and things to manage. And back in, I want to say 2002, they were agreed to a maximum levy of 00006. And so they've never been to that, but this would take them to that now.
Okay. Let's see. Council was invited to attend a community conversation as part of the Park City Visioning 2020 project. Did you happen to attend that?
Well, unfortunately, we went a little long in the tooth, and we didn't dismiss our meeting until after it was all but over. So, no, I didn't make it. There may have been one or two of the other council members that caught the very last few minutes of it. But we went overtime.
Has the county done anything like this, visioning, or do you have any plans to do something like this?
Leslie, I don't understand fully the kind of visioning that Park City was undertaking. If it was more on the carbon footprint and getting to the, you know, net zero by a certain date, or if it was broader than that. We certainly are working on the former, but overall visioning, we don't have an agenda for right at the moment.
All right. A longer meeting than you expected, I guess. Is there anything else that you wanted to mention or any public input you received that we should be aware of?
We did receive some public input from there were a few senior citizens that came and mildly rebuked us for not doing more for seniors, and that this woman, whom I know well, said, you know, she'd lived here 15 years, and of course she's 15 years older now, and she, as we all are, and really nothing has been done. And we explained that we did build a new seniors facility in Camas, but there's a growing demographic of seniors, and we need to strategize on how we can better meet their needs so that they can stay in the community and not be forced to maybe migrate to lower elevations or something as we all age. But that was the only public comment, and it was noteworthy.
Okay. Anything else then, Chris?
No, I think not.
All right. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you. Bye.
That's Summit County Council Member Chris Robinson. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Stay tuned. Coming up, a conversation with the chair of the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission, Melina Stevens. It's the Local News Hour. Well, on Tuesday, the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission forwarded a positive recommendation to the County Council for a new neighborhood mixed-use zoning district. On the phone to tell us about that, as well as the work session discussing the Dakota Pacific application for a mixed-use project at Kimball Junction, is the chair of the Basin Planning Commission, Melina Stevens. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
The Planning Commission, as I mentioned, approved this neighborhood mixed-use zoning district unanimously, but a long conversation about wanting the county council to know how torn you are about clarifying the residential component. Can you kind of give us the Reader's Digest version? I mean, what is it that you do? Just added some conditions of approval to this, or?
So with a neighborhood mixed-use zone, we've been working on this for, gosh, a year or so. And some of the things that we were really trying to get right was the mix of uses, the intensity, a lot of these different things to try to ensure that it's creating vibrant neighborhoods and that it's not just a facility to create another office park or something that's not really going to serve the community in the way that would really allow for, you know, live, work, play type of environment for these projects. So one thing that some commissioners were really concerned about was that if we didn't require a residential component as part of the neighborhood, that perhaps it wouldn't create that vibrancy. How it's written currently, that if there either needs to be a residential component or that component needs to be fulfilled by residential that's just adjacent to the property. And so that's one thing that Community Development Director Pat Putt said would be really helpful for us and for council if we just kind of outlined which items we had the most discussion on. We were maybe a little bit conflicted, as you said, so that they could focus and dig in on those areas when they do their review.
So did you come up with a certain percentage of housing as part of a project, or you left that kind of vague?
We left that kind of vague just because with these projects, a neighborhood mixed-use zone is only appropriate and can only be requested in specific areas that are outlined in the general plan. And some of those areas, there's a lot of housing just adjacent to some of those areas. And so we didn't want to tie the hands of potential individuals that could develop really vibrant projects that could serve those areas in great ways, or tie the hands of future planning commissioners, because then they'd have to include. And there still is an affordable housing component, so there will be, at least affordable housing in these projects. But the additional market rate housing we didn't require for that reason, that we thought flexibility was important in this zone.
All right. So you didn't really identify what that needs to be. I mean, a certain number of market rate or percentage of market rate attainable and workforce. I mean, attainable / affordable, I guess, is what we're looking for. Or is it workforce?
So the affordable housing is outlined already in code that, depending on how much they build commercial, if they build residential, there's certain requirements that they have to meet with an affordable housing component. So that is already codified. Will that change in the future? I can't say. But right now, that's already part of the code, so that's not something that we had to specifically outline. Within the neighborhood mixed-use zone, there is incentives for building additional affordable housing. So that, that is something that we focused on, is trying to increase the incentive to do that.
Okay, so the incentives then is what, to be able to build more market rate housing? Or what's the incentive?
Within the zone, there are several different things that they could request. You know, maybe they could have some additional height to be able to put affordable housing on top of some businesses, kind of thing, to be able to infill that way. We also had some, if they built parking structures, there were some incentives for that as well. So we want to make sure that we're really focusing on the goals of council as far as affordable housing, transportation, sustainability, that we're trying to build neighborhoods that are really achieving those goals, which are very interwoven. And so they kind of need to be addressed holistically. And that's what we're trying to accomplish with this. And I'm assuming how council will likely approach it as well.
Okay. And again, even with this zone, it's really more, I guess, of an overlay, I guess. It was something that would have to be applied for by an applicant?
Yes. So as I stated, there are specific areas that are outlined in the general plan, and those are the only areas that that could be approved. They would have to apply like any rezone and state, this is, we would like to rezone to this. One of the differences with the neighborhood mixed use zone in comparison to perhaps rezoning to something else is that they actually would also have to have their plans and go through a master plan development process as well. So we would be able to see what are they intending to build. Does that work within this zone? Is this what we're trying to accomplish? How does that work? So it gives a lot of flexibility and input to the Planning Commission and Council as we go through with approvals in the future.
During work session, there was another meeting with the applicants for Dakota Pacific, looking to kind of redo the proposed tech park into, I think, like a mixed-use zone. So would this new plan also use this new neighborhood mixed-use zone if it is eventually approved by the council?
So they're going through a different process because they already have a development agreement for that area, so they're opening that up and asking to change that development agreement. With the neighborhood mixed-use zone not currently being approved, they preempted that, so they wouldn't have to apply for a neighborhood mixed use zone. We're doing it through the development agreement that currently have is how they're approaching that.
All right. The applicant representative, Jeff Gocknow, telling the Planning Commission he'll have more detailed plans in the next 2 weeks. Have we even seen any drawings or renderings at this point?
We've seen some renderings. We saw some renderings 2 weeks ago regarding the overall project. It was really just a kind of introduction to the project. This past week, we had some commissioners that wanted to know more of a historical perspective on the property as far as what was entitled previously. All of us know about the tech center, but there was actually a very high-density, sprawled type of plan that was in place prior to the tech center. And so it was a very interesting, very helpful to see what had been envisioned at different times on that property and to know the history of how we got here as far as preserving a lot of open space in that area and how we got to the 1.4 million square feet on that property.
Okay, and we're approaching 2 million under this current application, correct?
Yes, and that's something we have not dug into all of that information yet. We're trying to approach it in bite-sized pieces so that we can really dig into each of these issues, such as, what is the percentage of affordable housing to market rate? What is that looking like? Why do they feel that the additional density is justified? We're going to go thoroughly into the transportation plan to look at what the transportation patterns and impacts will be, in addition to several other matters. So we'll likely be looking at this either every meeting or at least every other meeting for the next several months in work session, and then we'll start public hearing likely February, March.
You did hear from Gocknow saying that the traffic study, I believe, has been done, and they addressed the peak flow from the tech park, which would show a bigger impact on congestion than their proposed project would have. He claims that there would be no need for any of the people living in this community to need cars. Do you guys buy that?
Well, he did state that. We haven't, again, dug into that piece yet. We just had an initial overview of the traffic study briefly, not in this past meeting, but the meeting before. But we're going to have one, maybe two work sessions regarding the transportation plan so we can really dig into that. And then, of course, we'll have public hearings regarding all aspects of this project as well.
Sure. And can you briefly talk a little bit about the Civic Center component? I mean, are we talking about moving the Richens building?
So that is part of the proposal, is that they would like to do a land swap with the county for the parcel that the Richens building is on. And then it would be for a parcel within the project that would potentially allow for some additional gathering spaces, both indoor and outdoor, where, I mean, that process is a much different process that will have to occur concurrently, but that's not something that, as a planning commission, that we influence or have any control over whether or not that land swap occurs.
All right. Finally, just wanted to get in your, you heard the presentation of the active regional transportation plan. Any takeaways for you from that?
I really appreciated how collaborative the plan was between Summit County and Park City. They'd worked very closely together on the plan, and I think that showed. I think with how interwoven our community is at this point with, you know, unincorporated Park City, especially in Park City, as well as some of the surrounding areas, that if we're not approaching this regionally, that we're not going to be able to make as big an impact on our traffic issues and our transportation issues as we could working together. So I was really happy to see that and to look at all the list of projects that everyone is working on. I think it was really great work.
Yeah, did the planning commissioners, any of the planning commissioners offer any additional suggestions that they thought of as they were kind of watching the presentation?
So we weren't really asked for additional, this is really more of an informational type gathering. I mean, there are questions more specifically on, you know, different parts of the project, when things will be kind of rolled out and what type of pieces, if we're, you know, focusing more on bikes or bus or kind of both. So, I mean, there were some questions, but as far as comments for improvement, that wasn't really the purpose of the presentation.
Okay. Melina, anything else you'd like to mention?
Just again, thank you to staff and all of their hard work, and look forward to see council further digging in on some of these projects so we can get them completed and codified.
I appreciate your time, Melina.
Thank you very much, Leslie.
Melina Stevens is the chair of the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. You're listening to the Local News Hour. It's 8:47. Well, joining me now in the studio with an update from the Youth Sports Alliance, I have the Director of Youth Programs, Heather Sims, along with Development Director Jenna Dalton. Good morning, both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Heather, let's kick it off with you. We've got registration starting up for some of our Activate programs.
Yes, yeah, so we've got Activate is starting this week at their new session. We've already had over 150 kids take part so far, but our new session for Ecker and South Summit and Treasure start this weekend. We still have some spots available for Treasure, which is biathlon, glass fusion with Kimball Arts, and also speed camp with Athletic Republic. And our winter programs, snow and ice programs for Get Out and Play, are also open. They opened this week. And so kids can actually take part in skiing or Nordic jumping or speed skating. So all those options are now actually on our website. And usually we have about 700 kids going out in in January doing all these different sports, which we are lucky to have here in Park City.
So is it kind of first come, first serve? Or are you able to accommodate everyone who wants to participate?
So the Alpine, well, everything is first come, first serve. We do have scholarships, which we keep open. We have 100 scholarships available for our Alpine programs. But there are scholarships for all, but I do keep those, and those are first come, first serve too. People don't realize that there are 1,200 kids here in Park City that are on the free and reduced lunch program. And so for those kids, this is their only chance to get out in the mountain and be a regular kid enjoying wipeouts and lifts and all those fun things that everybody else gets the chance to do.
Okay, so you've got... I've pretty much covered all of the bases here in terms of the winter sports.
Yeah, So we even do luge. I mean, there's only two places in the country that can do luge, but we're lucky to have the facilities here to actually be able to offer that to our local kids.
All right. And at this point, you're dealing with all of the Park City schools, all local homeschoolers, as well as the Silver Summit Academy, South Summit Middle School, and
looking
to venture into North Summit as well?
Yeah, so our long-term plan will definitely be to go out to the whole of Summit County and possibly into Wasatch. But yeah, we've been really well received over in South Summit. You know, there has been nothing after school for them. So it's been really wonderful for these kids to just take part in activities after school in their early release days. It especially helps our working parents that need that help.
Okay, as well as our private schools. We've got and our charter school, Wileman School of Discovery, and Park City Day School.
That's correct, yeah. Everybody in town.
Okay, let's see, Jana, you still have a handful of tickets to Jan's Winter Welcome that I know you'd like to sell.
We sure do. Jan's Winter Welcome is 2 weeks from this Saturday at Stein Erickson Lodge. It's our 39th annual. Tables are sold out, and I literally have a handful of tickets left, so now's the time. Those are available on our website for $375 per person. So we would love to sell it out. It's a great event with all proceeds going directly back to our 7 winter sports clubs and our scholarship program. So if you cannot attend, we also have ways to get involved in that. Through that, you can purchase our opportunity drawing tickets. The grand prize is a Greek cruise for two through the Greek islands, 7 nights. So there are ways to get involved without actually attending the event.
Okay. And you can actually, when you purchase those opportunity drawing tickets, can actually have that proceed?
Yes. So you can designate which club you would like it to go to, as well as give credit to the athlete. So it's, again, 100% of the proceeds go back to those sports clubs. So it's a great fundraiser for those teams.
Yeah, like some $300,000?
Yeah, yeah. We give back about $300,000 directly to the team, so.
Okay. Heather, you wanted to talk a little bit about the Circle of Excellence that was held a couple weeks ago?
Yes, so our local Skull County offices held our Circle of Excellence. It was our 13th, and we had over 130 kids take part in that. And we recognized the top 5% of our athletes in the All-Star Award, the Champion Award, the Leadership Award, the Sam Jackenthal Award, and even the Get Out and Play kids actually have some awards that they are given for our core values. And we gave out our Hall of Fame, which one of them is a local well-known coach by the name of Dar Hendrickson, who everybody knows here. And one of his athletes, Ted Ligety, actually gave that award to him, which was very exciting. He is a longtime supporter of the YSA and has given back through Jan's Winter Welcome, his Dar lunches, Dar dinners rather, and has raised thousands of dollars for us. We also gave out an award to our Hall of Fame for Maddie Olson, a freestyle skier. Our Spirit of Service was Richard Scheinberg, who has done so much for the YSA over the years. Our Sam Jackenthal Showstopper was Lauren Masuga, who has just been named to the U.S. National team, and our leadership award went to Stephen Schumann, a Nordic combined athlete, as well as Lane Marshall, who was given our Spirit of Sport award. So it was a very exciting event. The kids love it, and we are very proud to give back to them for their hard work that they've done throughout the year.
Okay. And then Jana, as Heather had mentioned, scholarships available for all programs, and that's done through the endowment, the Stein Erickson?
Yes, so I'm very excited to announce that we just awarded a little over $118,000 to junior athletes in our 7 winter sports clubs through our fall scholarship application. This is a record number thanks to the Stein Erickson Endowment, which we started drawing funds on just a little over 3 years ago. So that number is growing, and we are excited to be awarding more and more to the athletes in need in this community. You know, we had over $400,000 in requests. Unfortunately, there's a gap there that our long-term goal is to close that gap and award more dollars to these athletes.
Okay. So does that endowment continue?
It's continuing to grow. It's earning about 4%. And our goal is to grow that endowment larger and larger, like I said, to so that we can in turn award more athletes in this community.
Okay. And then finally wanted to mention that tonight you can It's kind of a give back night.
Yes. So we Versante, which is located in the Peaks Hotel in Park City, is a great supporter of ours. They're giving back 25% of their sales this evening to YSA and our scholarship program for Get Out and Play and Activate. So if you don't feel like making dinner tonight, it's a great way to support YSA. You can even stop and get pizza to go. That goes to YSA as well. So please visit Versante tonight. They open at 4 p.m. and it's a great, great cause.
Okay. Anything else?
No, just if you want to register for any of the programs that are open, please go to ysaparkcity.org. You can also find information on Jan's Winter Welcome and our opportunity drawing tickets right there.
Okay. Hey, Jana, Heather, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
You.